Welcome to the live webinar, Turning Browsers into Buyers, How to Optimize the E-Commerce Experience, sponsored by FDL and powered by Retail Online Integration. I'm Jennifer DePasquale, publisher of ROI Magazine, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists, and we'll be addressing select questions during the end of the hour. You can send those in at any time. Please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience. Here today to discuss the optimization of the e-commerce experience, we've got Sucharita Mulpuru, Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester, and Tom Smith, who's in product marketing at FDL. Sucharita is Forrester's leading expert on e-commerce, multi-channel retail, consumer behavior, and trends in the online shopping space. She is also a noted authority on technology developments that affect the online commerce industry and vendors that facilitate online marketing and merchandising. Having spent the majority of his career as a technology product marketer in a global role and having worked with some of the biggest international brands at the second largest media agency in the world, Tom's expertise lies in forming product marketing strategies, taking products to market on a global scale, and forming communication strategies to support such launches. So without further ado, I would like to turn the reins over to Sucharita to start us off.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me here and for giving me the opportunity to share a little bit of our research, in particular on optimizing the e-commerce experience. Now, I'm going to start with a few background slides that share a bit of the data on why consumers buy online and what are the single biggest drivers of the experience. This is essentially, I think, a very good summary of essentially the trifecta of reasons that consumers do choose to transact in the web channel. It typically comes down to selection, convenience, and value. And the order of those three things can vary depending on the time of year, the type of retailer that you're talking to, or when you're conducting the survey. But for the most part, it always comes down to the opportunity to find extended assortments and products that you can't typically find in a physical store. It could be new colors or sizes. It is often about the fact that consumers can buy where they want, when they want, and they have a store that's available and open to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as opposed to some of the more finite limitations around a physical bricks and mortar retailer. And finally, because of naturally the way that so many retailers launched and their relatively low cost of operations in getting started, or their heavily subsidized operations in getting started, we typically find that value is also a factor that drives the shopper experience. In particular, the marketplace model has really, really supported that because it helps to match demand with supply, particularly for long-tail items, and the web has been tremendously successful in executing against that. Now, that said, the vast majority of sales continue to happen in stores, and this is a graphic that we update every year, but it's one of our last overall e-commerce and cross-channel forecast figures. This is data that is specific to the United States, but it, for the most part, shares a story about the breakout between cross-channel sales, online sales, and offline-only sales. So there are three sets of numbers on each of these bars here. So this is at the highest level a forecast of retail sales in the U.S. Through the year 2016. And the bottom number in the lightest blue is the online-only sales. So these are transactions that are completed online through either a desktop or some type of a mobile device, and the transaction is completed through those specific devices. The middle number, which is the kind of that middle shade of blue, represents the online influence on the offline sale, so some type of digital influence. And typically that digital influence can range from heavy to light, and what that means is it can be a consumer who has very heavily researched the purchase or has researched things like pricing or may have even configured an item and then ultimately completed the transaction offline. It can be a type of research that's as light as a consumer having gone to a store locator link and used something very, very low touch in completing a transaction. And then the dark blue represents the offline-only transactions. And essentially, the net-net takeaway here is that even though we know that e-commerce is growing rapidly, it's still off of a relatively small base, and a significant portion of that has to do with opportunities that companies still have in optimizing their presence. Now, there are still further challenges that lie in the fact that consumers are increasingly likely to have smartphones and tablets at their disposal, and, of course, what that means is that there are increasingly challenging usability experiences because of the size of the screen, because of the download times, because consumers aren't always necessarily comfortable with completing transactions on these devices. Just some high-level data points. There are only probably a couple that I'll call out. One is that there are a significant number of consumers that have smartphones at this point in time. Our estimate is that unique smartphone users by 2014 is north of 150 million, and there are somewhere between 50 and 100 million tablet consumers or consumers who have access to and use tablets on a regular basis. So these naturally have an impact on all of our shopping visits, and that's invariably something that we see happening in significant volumes is the growth and the overall percent of traffic that's coming to websites from mobile devices. And usually that number is rarely lower than 20% for most retailers from a traffic standpoint, and that 20% figure is becoming increasingly aggressive even for sales as well. At the same time, we know that site metrics continue to be challenged. This is data that we'd collected over a decade in partnership with shop.org, where Forrester has executed surveys of retailers to ask them about their key metrics. And even over that relatively long period of time, what we typically see is that conversion rates haven't really budged for retail. So even with the advent of phones or even with the advent of improved knowledge around best practices, we've seen conversion rates for e-commerce sites hovering in the 2 to 3% range. Cart abandonment hasn't changed. We haven't necessarily improved our customer servicing, even though there's so many digital tactics that should theoretically even make the ability for the customer to service themselves even lower. And we haven't even necessarily gotten better at retaining our existing shoppers. Now, some of that could be due to the fact that there's such a heavy level of spend on customer acquisition. But the larger point is that we, as a business, even though the industry has been evolving, we haven't been doing more with less. In fact, we've kind of really just taken advantage of the fact that there are more consumers shopping online and that many of those consumers are increasing their wallet share online, not necessarily looking to deliver vastly better experiences for those customers that are shopping online. Now, one of the things that is incredibly important in delivering that great user experience that does drive greater conversion and really is the heart of why we're interested in talking a bit about turning browsers into buyers has a lot to do with site optimization. And when the early phases of e-commerce, which I would describe as the late 90s, probably through the first dot-com bust in 2001, there were pretty standard, and I would characterize them as not very good usability experiences. These were largely licensed solutions that were constrained by the amount of bandwidth that consumers even had access to. And a lot of these retailers didn't even have much in the way of budget. So what that meant was that the experiences that they were able to deliver to customers were were very, very limited in scope. Now, that second phase of e-commerce between the time that I would characterize as 2001 to 2008 was where we started to see more basic site improvements. And any time there was a best practice that a retailer had discovered, often what would happen is that they would present their findings or share some of those ideas at conferences like the Shop.org Annual Summit. And a lot of those best practices have come to be second nature and have come to become the elements of a website that consumers come to expect. And I would, you know, put in characteristics like a strong site search or capabilities around ratings and reviews to fall into these buckets. And these were largely plug-in modules. And there wasn't a lot of customization around this because it was mainly kind of getting customers up to speed on being able to take advantage of, in a scalable way, large inventory catalogs or a way to scalably collect feedback from shoppers that could then support future shopping experiences for other customers. And then the last phase is phase three, which I would define as really the era now in which there is much, much greater talk around dynamic optimization. And what we mean by this is more than just touch points, also looking at all of the various data points that exist about a shopper all across their shopping journey, not just on your own website, but even on the same device on other websites, and really trying as best we can to get to a one-to-one execution. And a significant part of the push to cloud and SaaS solutions has really supported a lot of that shift because it has enabled us to take advantage of relatively large data sets in real time and to be able to empower retailers to provide those better shopping experiences. What I'll say is that, you know, when we talk about kind of phase two, a lot of what's here on this list really falls into it. This is a framework that we call our tech radar at Forrester. And what it is essentially a mapping to help support companies in how they should think about prioritizing efforts and where they should invest any finite funds that they may have. And this is a framework that we applied to on-site merchandising, and it was a bunch of tactics that over the years we have collected data on from retailers of things that they have integrated on their site and what they find effective. And along the x-axis, it maps out where that particular tactic is on the spectrum from birth to death, and then it also maps out on the y-axis the value that those tactics have historically provided to retailers, and that's data that retailers have shared with us in a self-reported form that they tell us if this is of high, medium, or low value to them. And really what phase two was in kind of our evolution of optimizing sites was about trying to get as much as we could on the right side of the chart, you know, and on the top, you know, kind of green line integrated onto the site experience. And that's where we saw a lot of those efforts. So it was things like, you know, if you didn't already have alternative images or Zoom, that these were, you know, kind of basic elements of driving the site forward. Now, what I want to spend some time talking about is what we have observed as being particularly important in optimizing the experience for e-commerce and how to really make that dynamic experience that we are, you know, kind of pushing beyond that phase two and getting to phase three. And what we mean by, you know, optimizing and how we're finding some of the various approaches working is that I would argue that the interactive marketing world has really shaped a lot of what is now happening on site with the merchandising world. And the reason for that is that interactive marketers through the 90s and even in the earlier part of the last decade were engaging in a lot of the types of tactics around measurement and optimization that seem to be great frameworks to apply to a website as well. So that's where we started to learn, I would argue, about things that have become very, very much more commonplace and much more accepted and important to best-in-class retailers, like testing copy and creative, dynamically adjusting a data feed to account for things like margin or inventory levels or even things that could be exogenous like the weather. They were great at interactive marketers, I mean, were particularly skilled at personalizing and content and doing segmentation based on a consumer's previous clickstream history. For years, retailers have known about who clicks through an email or what cohort does that customer fall into, and then subsequently messaging subsequent emails to that person based on what that behavior is that you've collected about them based on that email alone. And then, of course, there's a significant amount of landing page optimization that interactive marketers have introduced e-commerce to. And I would argue that a lot of that really is still a work in progress with respect to actually optimizing all of those experiences to the site merchandising experience and the browse experience once we actually get a customer to land on a page within our site. And there are a number of things that we recommend and we think are essential to really driving that dynamic optimization. And just to name a few, it's data points and very, very powerful data points that we have. We often, kind of take a lot of effort to understand what were the search terms that a customer may have come onto a site from, say, a search engine like a Google, but equally as powerful is the intent from one's own on-site search and recognizing that search doesn't just end at the page where, the results are rendered. It is something that could be indicative of a longer shopping journey, and that can be incredibly powerful to supporting recommendations and ultimately exposing a guest to products that they may not have seen or recognized otherwise. We also want to look at things like just the current click stream, so beyond just what terms they may be typing in a search box, what are the departments or the categories or the products that they're looking at, are there any patterns in that could indicate that the customer may be in the market longer term for a particular product or category. Recommendations that can be adjusted to a shopper's visit. So really taking advantage of, those first two bullets, like, for instance, what somebody may be doing in a current search box or what their current clickstream path is, and then dynamically adjusting the recommendations that surface on those pages. Also, of course, looking at the triggers for cross-sells and upsells as based on items in a cart. Often, we'll look at triggers for cross-sells and upsells being what's the current page that the customer may be looking at, and one of the often overlooked opportunities, and it's not always, a guaranteed opportunity, but if there are items in a shopping cart that may have been added recently, to be able to take advantage of that data to showcase other complementary items that could be of appeal to a particular guest shopper. Insight into, and this is very, very important, differences between new and repeat shoppers. That's one of probably the single biggest differences in cohorts that we see that can affect behavior. To give an offer to a new customer that's different from an offer to a repeat customer can be incredibly enriching. And there are schools of thought that debate both sides of it. Do you give extra offers to your repeat customers even when you know that they'll likely convert, or do you not give offers to your repeat customers because that is where you can sometimes make margin if you can get new shoppers in the door? And I tend to probably fall more on the side of rewarding your best shoppers because there's a lot of interest data. That's a lot of what some of the best personalization companies out there, like Tesco, have been doing is taking advantage of rewarding already good customers and ensuring that you continue to capture their loyalty in hyper competitive hyper competitive retail landscapes. We want to look at the location of the customer. So if there's information that can directly happen from an IP address or, can you infer somebody's location based on if they happen to be looking for, say, winter gear or summer gear, to think about customizing content or offers potentially that reflect that type of need. That's particularly pertinent in a lot of categories like apparel or even food categories. Dynamic pricing is becoming increasingly interesting and important in a world where some of the largest retailers are already dynamically pricing their products, particularly for fast-moving goods that are broadly available, and they do this in order to try to capture market share. So to be in that landscape and to be able to really provide competitive offers, especially if you offer commoditized goods, will become increasingly critical in turning browsers to buyers. And the last bit is adjusting the device information. So taking advantage of what you know about a browser type or even the type of mobile device that a customer may be accessing your content on and ensuring that that content is relatively well optimized. You don't need to overspend and create a new experience for every single page, but even just having a good confluence of both, you know, a site that renders well and that downloads quickly, you know, kind of being the best of all worlds. Now, when we look at, you know, kind of a lot of those things on the previous pages, there are a number of retailers, and, you know, I count companies like Netflix and Apple or and Amazon in that bucket, but they've been really doing a lot of this personalization and taking advantage of information, data, and inputs that we know about customers and creating unique experiences for virtually every customer that visits the site. But what really is the big opportunity is how we can morph that to opportunities for other retailers as well. And when I look at, you know, kind of how do you optimize the experience and how do you create dynamic, you know, experiences that are about, you know, kind of that more personalized type of marketing, I look at three key parts of the site experience. One is the homepage. And I would also make it a little bit broader than the homepage because, of course, increasingly fewer customers are actually entering your site through a homepage. But it's also about any type of a landing page. So it could be a category page or that first point of entry into your site. And, you know, kind of the opportunities there are about, you know, tying promotional offers to customer segments or really, really varying some of your shipping offers that could be different for different cohorts of customers. It could be based on, you know, offers or content that you're showcasing geographically or even, you know, sorting, you know, kind of key pages by inventory availability, particularly for those landing pages. Then when we look at the next big area that captures a lot of the page views on any site experience, there are those product detail pages. And when we look at what are some of the ways to really create dynamic optimization in those pages, personalized recommendations that are often driven by some of these inputs that we talked about are going to be particularly critical. And then, you know, at checkout, you know, we'd even, you know, urge you to consider taking some of that intelligence around the algorithms of personalized recommendations and offering them at checkout on that first, you know, kind of shopping cart page, or even providing things like, you know, session level offers, you know, to try to get a shopper to actually convert, you know, within a particular session. So I thought I would spend a few slides just giving you some visual examples of some interesting experiences that could be worth emulating because they seem to emulate and characterize a lot of, you know, kind of the good ways that you can convert browsers into buyers in a somewhat dynamic format as well. You know, so some of the things that we encourage is to really think about incorporating recommendations throughout the shopping experience. And often what we'll hear is kind of phase one is maybe you'll put, you know, a couple of recommendations on the right rail of a product detail page. But we encourage companies to think about, you know, kind of recommendations throughout the site experience. And that can be, you know, on category landing pages, on, you know, the tops and the bottom navigation of different pages to be thinking about, you know, the recommendations in areas that are expected, like on product detail pages, or even in, you know, kind of any type of a search results page. So the more that this type of information gets populated, the more likely that there are items that are added to cart as a result of these recommendations. And that's a correlation that is largely true. And, you know, your ability to manipulate the recommendations that surface based on the inventory levels that you may have or the margins that you may be able to capture on certain items can be particularly powerful. We also encourage thinking about, just even creative layouts and treatments of things like recommendations during key search moments, for instance. This is a good example from the British site Screwfix, and they have suggestive search, which is in itself a very, very powerful tool that can expose guests to content that they may not have even known what to look for. But the visual cues that are there are also particularly powerful because it, too, can be, a way to drive incremental traffic and incremental units sold of items that may not have received that type of exposure otherwise. We, of course, also recommend putting recommendations in emails. And to think about not just your marketing emails, but your order confirmation emails, those interactive emails that are post-transaction. And we've heard some really, really interesting data points on how powerful the open rates on those emails often are. Open rates on order confirmation or shipping confirmation emails can often be north of 50%. So to be able to surface content that is product-related on those pages can be very, very important, and it's an opportunity that you don't want to miss. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that, we've learned over the years, and this becomes even more important as the size of screens get smaller, is that you want to make recommendations wherever possible visible, without a lot of effort. And, for the desktop, that means above the fold. Even for mobile devices, to try to keep, your best items kind of scroll-worthy, toward the top of the experience. And, there is a school of thought that, people are willing to scroll all the way to the bottom, and, that's not, completely all for naught, but it's still important to keep in mind that people still read from upper left to bottom right often, the higher you are toward the top, the more likely the customer is actually to be exposed to what it is that you're trying to showcase. Product detail pages we look at should really be about upselling while thinking about cross-sells for checkout. And the reason that we say that is that on the product detail page, the consumer may not be as far along in the purchase journey. And what you want to do is to try to encourage, them to be exposed to other items that may sometimes be at a higher price point and a higher quality level or a higher basket value level. And that's a good thing to try to get consumers to essentially, consider some of those higher ticket goods. And then at checkout, the idea being to add incremental items because the guest is already along the purchase funnel and they have committed to buying something or they are highly likely to buy something, and you want to try to add incremental units to that cart. When we're thinking about recommendations, you want to be as careful with how you actually represent the verbiage around recommendations. So you want to think about specific terms like exposing why somebody may have made a recommendation. So customers liked these bestsellers or customers who purchased this, rather than just we recommend, which is more generic and doesn't expose with as much transparency why the recommendation that you gave was the recommendation that you gave. Faceted navigation is now really table stakes, and this is a screenshot from an apparel and soft goods merchant on exactly that. Consumers increasingly, as they browse through a site experience, they are looking to be able to filter that experience in a way that's relevant to their search results, whether it's by size or color or certain types of categories or brands, and to be able to provide those filters to a guest, particularly when there is a deep, rich product catalog that can be overwhelming, which often websites, even for relatively small merchants, do have because they tend to offer the extended assortment online, it's increasingly an imperative to have the ability to pivot on key features for a site, especially in a category like apparel or footwear by size. We also had talked about, you know, different treatments for different types of visitors and, you know, kind of turning browsers into buyers. And I have used this a few times in the past, but I really like this example of Neiman Marcus and how it's essentially a page, a home page, that is rendered differently to a customer based on whether it's they're a new customer or a repeat customer. And the verbiage is a little small to read here on this particular chart, but basically in the circle, it's an offer for first-time visitors who get, you know, kind of a special offer that's different from what a repeat visitor or repeat shopper may see. Suggestive search I had referenced, and in terms of helping shoppers navigate quickly through an experience becomes particularly pertinent, especially on devices like phones and tablets, where minimizing the number of keystrokes and giving shoppers a way to more quickly navigate through the experience can be incredibly powerful in driving them more quickly to their pages that they are interested in that ultimately drive conversion. Now, one of my last points is that during any recommendation engine or any type of presentation of products, you want to constantly be tweaking and optimizing your algorithms. That should be one of the most important jobs of site merchandisers, is to make sure that what you have is scalable, but that it's relevant for your business on any given day. And in some cases, you know, what you'll want to ensure that your algorithm surfaces is products that could be seasonal because that's what's new and that's what is available for purchase. It could be about exposing or disposing of items that you happen to have a lot of in stock. Or in some cases, it could just be about improving the types of offers and recommendations that you give based on what you know about the mindsets of certain types of customers. If somebody is, you know, if there's a site that's in the business of selling, you know, laser printers, you know, kind of presenting new products may not be completely relevant for that type of product, you know, kind of really, really presenting complementary items that are compatible with the master product and, you know, creating those adjacent purchases, I mean, that becomes much, much more critical. That may not be as important in categories like soft goods, but, you know, nonetheless, you know, kind of the nature of how the algorithms get tweaked is incredibly important. And you also want to think about rendering items differently on different devices. One of my favorite examples is Staples and, you know, how they've adjusted, you know, even for the tablet, the content on their tablet experience. A lot more of it is scrollable. It is touch-friendly. A lot of the icons are bigger. They're not necessarily drastic differences, but the look and feel does vary, and it is optimized to give the shopper an experience that's optimized for the device that we're talking about without necessarily creating a lot of onerous creative burden on that separate experience. One more thing that we want to point out from the standpoint of converting browsers into buyers is that if you do happen to have an app, that apps, you know, have a good and bad element associated with them. On the positive side, they do tend to convert a little bit more strongly, particularly for customers that have logged in information and may have purchased before. The downside is that the number of people who are touched by any given retailer's app is relatively small, and you know, that raises a lot of conundrums around how much do you invest in an app, and you know, kind of how do you you know, kind of allocate marketing budget when you have so many other competing marketing needs to driving more downloads of a particular app. But to the degree that you have an app and that it is it's functional and it's something that delivers a better guest experience than the mobile web, you want to, wherever possible, ensure that the customer knows that it's there when they're browsing the mobile web. So it can be at touch points, like, for instance, on search, or it can also be on the mobile website experience in and of itself, where in sort of the top box there is the opportunity to either download an app if it exists or open the app if the site has detected that you already have the app downloaded, but you may have forgotten that that you actually had it there for use. So I'm hoping that that beep was not anything that we need to worry about. But a few don'ts to think about. We want you to not neglect your product recommendation feature, even if you plan to set and forget. So really, really think about allocating teams of people who, an individual who is constantly tweaking those algorithms. You want to make sure that any recommendations that you have, don't start with a clumsy taxonomy. I mean, if you have, items that haven't been mapped appropriately, no amount of effort into a recommendation engine is going to necessarily resolve issues that may exist with, not even having in your content management system information about, say, compatible products or brands that should or should not go together. Don't underestimate the challenge of doing it in-house. I mean, that is why a lot of retailers will work with, solutions providers and really, really supplement a lot of their support with some services from some of these solution providers. And don't ignore your company's unique challenges. I think that most of you probably, fully recognize that. But what we mean by that is if there are, certain types of executives that have biases toward, how, the site experience looks, that could fundamentally affect what you're able to integrate onto your site experience. And, that typically exists in every organization, and it's a matter of often working around those constraints and creating a solution that is optimal for you. And this is, I think, my last parting slide, which is basically it's just a correlation that we have between the importance of a customer experience and a stronger company overall. And at Forrester, we have a large report that we put out every year called our Customer Experience Index, and it is essentially a rank order of about 100 different consumer-facing brands and how consumers actually find them reliable and enjoyable and all of those elements that, as consumers, make us loyal to a company. And what we find is that companies that receive higher Customer Experience Index scores also tend to have higher stock performances and higher just kind of market valuations versus some of the laggards that are really struggling from a customer experience standpoint. So hopefully a lot of the bullet points that we had addressed in the previous slides really speak to some of those tactical ways that from a digital standpoint you can optimize your shopper experience and hopefully drive value for your company overall. This is my email if anyone does have any questions that they don't get a chance to ask at the end of the webinar, but I'm going to now transition and hand the mic over to Tom.
Great. Thank you very much, Sucharita. Okay, we will have time at the end for some questions for Sucharita as well, so if you want to put your questions in the Q&A, please do so. I'm going to nicely segue, I think, from Sucharita's ending point there around customer experience and talk a little bit about how we see some of the customers we work with and generally the industry within retail and e-commerce moving towards what we call experience-driven commerce. And basically what I want to, talk about is how we've moved from, say, a transaction focus towards more of an experience focus. I mean, we heard within Sucharita's slides that and presentation a lot about how do you optimize the experience, how do you personalize the experience, and that word experience is really on the tip of the tongue of most retailers and e-commerce marketers today as they move away from just thinking about conversion alone and the transaction alone. So we're really seeing this move away from, say, the transaction focus where you have a focus on basic catalog content exposed, not being able to expose all the richness of the attributes that you have in your product catalog, but just showcasing the basic elements of that. Perhaps the sort of previous transaction focus is really thinking about little, minimal data points and to optimize and little understanding of customer context so that there's not really a lot of personalization going on there in terms of understanding of the customer, their behavior, and their context. Really, in this sort of older world view, we see this division between channels as well, right? You think about the in a retail scenario, this massive division between in-store and online, but then also the division between how do you deliver an experience on mobile versus desktop versus tablet. Now, again, we also think about the whole recommendation side of things, which was a strong focus of Sucharita's presentation, where the old world of a transaction-based thought and rather than experience-based thought was, well, we have to push products. Let's push products. And that's not really the way that we should think about how we create a good customer experience. We also see things like silos between the content and brand, content or brand and e-commerce teams, and that's really a big topic. We'll go into that a little bit in my presentation, but where we're really seeing the sort of brand teams and the e-commerce teams converging. There is conflict, but they're really kind of converging about how do they create an experience for that customer, regardless of who owns the experience. And in the older world, we saw, you know, a minimal understanding of how to go international, how to manage multiple sites with a single team or a small team, how to localize, how to be culturally relevant, those types of things. Again, you know, with the fast-moving nature of e-commerce and retailing online, that this sort of older world view really didn't take in a better understanding of how to go international. However, what we're seeing now and what we're driving towards and what we're helping our customers towards as well, actually, is this experience focus. So thinking about how do you enrich your catalog? How do you make sure you showcase that catalog in a merchandising experience that really shows it in its best way, that takes into account all of the great attributes you have and the descriptions you have about your product catalog and really showing them in the best way to the customer. The second step in the experience-driven commerce focus really is context awareness and data influenced experiences. So, you know, context being, well, what do I know about what my customer's doing right now in this moment, and how do I use that data to deliver an experience? Three is satisfying the omnichannel norm. So I'll talk a little bit about, you know, what omnichannel means in a moment, but, you know, we really have to think about omnichannel as a standard today. Four is influencing product discovery, and this really relates to the pushing products, right? It's about serendipity and influencing discovery as opposed to pushing products to customers. Customers still want to feel like they're having a great shopping experience and they perhaps have discovered something themselves, but you as a business still want to push content and items to them as well. Five is blending content and commerce. As we see the commerce and brand teams converge, we want to be able to create experiences that integrate content with commerce. And six is thinking about a refined, controlled, and culturally relevant international e-commerce experience that really understands how customers shop in those different markets and how to create a shopping experience for them that is relevant to them. So this big shift we're seeing towards experience-driven commerce is really driven by these trends that Sucharita was talking about. And I'll go into a couple of examples of these six things in the following slides. First of all, I mean, catalog enrichment can mean many things. One of the things I'd like to, you know, basically given as example of enrichment of the catalog is video. And so ASOS, which is the world's largest online fashion retailer, actually uses video of models on the catwalk showcasing the dresses and products. And this has really helped integrate it into the commerce experience and really helps people engage the customer and drive them towards purchase. And of course, we know the numbers about how, you know, video essentially can improve conversion and how customers are more likely to purchase after watching a video. So essentially 55% of consumers are more likely to purchase after watching a video. I talked a little bit about context, and I think this slide nicely describes, you know, what we mean about context. You know, this customer we have, we could potentially find so many different data points about this customer, you know, what their explicit profile, their age group, whether they're a loyalty customer to an airline, whether they bought a tablet a month ago, some of the contextual behavioral location data, where are they, what phone do they use, Do they prefer on the go with 3G, 4G? What time of day is it that they're interacting with you as a brand or as a retailer? All of these things in a digital world are data points that we as e-commerce marketers and merchants can pick up on. And this is really a big trend, the rise of context. It's no longer about the mobile consumer or the, it's no longer about the device. It's about the mobile consumer. It's about thinking, what are they doing at that point in time with a certain device? Not just saying, I have to do mobile. It's, well, my customers are using mobile at this point in the journey, and therefore I have to optimize it there. So it's really about, you know, deriving these insights from customer behaviors that then allow you to use that data to drive the experience. And we're already seeing, you know, context as a huge topic where if you can harness that data and use it for merchandising, for marketing purposes, for, you know, optimizing and personalizing the e-commerce experience, you're really going to drive loyalty and conversion with your customers. The further point is within the sort of context and data area is data-driven merchandising. We have a team within our company that focuses on consulting with merchandisers, and we actually did a lot of research around how positioning of products can influence a purchase behavior, and we actually found that with some of our studies, for example, using wine, that if you position a wine product second on the row within the Lister page, it actually accounts to as much as a 21% discount in the price of that product. So the positioning, the merchandising positioning of products within a Lister page, for example, is hugely important to how you deliver business results. And you need to be able to access these data points so that you can understand, well, if I move this position to position two, or I move it along, or, you know, I push it further down, how is that going to impact my conversion rates? Of course, you can do that through, you know, testing and everything else, but also you have to understand what's going to be deliver the result for your business if they buy. So very interesting sort of studies around, you know, positioning and merchandising that really can help us understand what we need to do around optimization of merchandising. I talked about satisfying the omni-channel norm. I think, you know, I won't go through all the detail in this slide, but really today e-commerce folk and retailers are moving vastly and fastly towards the omni-channel experience. And that's really thinking about the customer centricity, a unified experience across channels, regardless of channel, that they can offer their entire catalog to a customer regardless of channel as well, and that they have an organization that's servicing the customer across these channels. So really there's a big shift towards this, you know, from cross-channel, from multi-channel to omni-channel. And a good example of this is Majestic Wine. They actually, we've been working for them. They're a UK-based wine company. And what they have done is they can tie in when the customer logs in and defines which their local store, which is their local store, they can then say, well, okay, when you search for Sauvignon Blanc wine, we will only show you the wines that are in stock in your local store. So what they're doing there is they're tying in the sort of stock data, the store data, to the digital experience and blending them together to make sure it's relevant for the customer in their context, which in this case is my local store. The next thing is influencing product discovery. I think, you know, there's a big difference between pushing products and discovering products, and I think this quote is great from the CEO of Rakuten, which talks about people forgetting thinking that search online is the same as shopping. It's not. We need to think about how do customers discover products, how do they feel, what's their journey, and how do they arrive at a product, so we can then optimize through either recommendations, through search, through navigation, and make sure that they arrive at the right product that's for them, but they still feel like it's a little serendipitous and not just being pushed products. I'd also like to, you know, talk about this blend of content and commerce. I think this is a really interesting topic, which is really on the up. We're seeing retailers, pure play retailers and old school retailers investing heavily in content. So again, ASOS, a good example. Their old homepage used to be very recommendations and product push focus. Now, if I cover up the promotions piece, you have on the right-hand side some information, topics, articles about how to buy a leather jacket. There's social streams in there. But they're integrating that with the commerce experience. So if you think you see that the main section still has their kind of promotions and offers and everything, but now what they're doing is blending those two together. And it's, you know, the ability to be able to think about how can content and product and merchandising all work together to drive engagement and to drive leadership within your space and differentiate you as a retailer, not just to push products, but to actually give value to the customer. And that's really where the blending of content and commerce comes together. The sixth point of the kind of experience-driven commerce steps is internationalization. And this is, again, you know, when we talk to our customers, big, big topic for e-commerce. It's, you know, how do I go international, you know, full stop, and what are the considerations I need to have to go international? You know, we're seeing that how do you make sure you control merchandising centrally if you don't have the resource in country? How is that propagated across your different stores? Think about language considerations. So what, you know, how do we translate and localize the message and the products? How do our shoppers in these international areas actually interact and shop? You know, how do they use smartphones, tablets? Do they prefer imagery and video or a pure kind of really transactional experience? Are they in store and online, or are they quite happy to purchase just online? So really international considerations really important there. Again, you know, for example, you know, what do you call this in international? Is it a sneaker? Is it a shoe? Is it a trainer? Is it a running shoe? You know, very basic things, but again, something to think about in terms of how do you go international as a business. So those are kind of in a swift few minutes, some of the sort of recommendations and ideas that we had around how do you get towards experience-driven commerce. And it's really thinking about that word experience and about the customer at the center of it. No longer about, you know, how do I do mobile, how do I do omnichannel, but think about how the customer interacts with you and how you can blend those experiences together to make it sticky and to make them buy more. Before we go into questions, I just want to talk about SDL and kind of the way that we work within e-commerce. So we have a technology for e-commerce that helps optimize and personalize the shopping experience through on-site search, through digital merchandising experiences, through personalization and predictive targeting. So we help our customers optimize conversion rates, making shopping more inspiring, intuitive, and part of the complete customer experience. We provide, you know, technology for merchants and marketers to have kind of total control over that experience, you know, be able to deliver campaigns and recommendations and deliver dynamic navigation across the store without having to involve IT and being able to, you know, dynamically optimize that and allowing, you know, basically access to those data points that I talked about that enables you to personalize. So access to customer context and blending those data points together to make a relevant recommendation or a relevant product push to the customer. So our technologies really help optimize and personalize the shopping experience. And we put all those together essentially into what we call the customer experience cloud. So we're putting together our e-commerce capabilities along with analytics, with social analytics, with language capabilities, campaigns, and web content management. So we're really focusing on how do you blend that customer experience together across the different touch points to deliver a really, you know, inspiring and interactive customer experience for anyone across retail or B2B. So that's really, you know, SDL's offering from a customer experience point of view. I think we're coming up to 5 minutes before the end. So I'm going to sign off for my piece, and I think we'll go to some questions that the audience may have. So I just go to the question and answer slide. So if you have any questions, please do submit them in the Q&A box, and I will read them out and ask them. I will either answer myself or ask them to Sucharita. So bear with you just a minute. Okay. So question from Jeff Jocare. Thanks, Jeff. What do you see as the single largest innovation in e-commerce in the next few years? Sucharita, perhaps that's one for you to start off with, the single largest innovation in e-commerce in the next few years.
I don't know that there is a really simple answer. I mean, I think it depends on the dimension that you're looking at. I mean, is it, you know, from a pricing standpoint, or is it from an inventory management standpoint? You know, I think that what is going to be influential for a lot of companies is actually executing well on these omni-channel efforts, because they do need to figure out how they're going to take better advantage of their store infrastructure. You know, if you are talking about, you know, the single biggest shift that's happening from a device standpoint, it's the amount of internet traffic that's going through phones and tablets. And you know, that means that as e-commerce merchants, you need to make sure that the content is appropriate and rendered quickly on those devices. Otherwise, you're going to lose, you know, a lot of customer attention that way.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to pinpoint one as well. I definitely think when I was the point about the blending of content and commerce, definitely that's something we're seeing as one of the largest changes I expect that's happening in the e-commerce industry, where you know, traditionally the split between those who deal with brand and those who deal with commerce was very delineated, and now we're seeing, well, you know, that's really becoming a blended experience. So out of that change and transformation, and perhaps the conflict that might happen within organizations that have separate teams and separate ownerships of experiences there, I think there will come innovations, and you'll see that some of those that start, you know, breaking down those silos between those two teams and creating a blended experience that really helps the customer towards a purchase are going to be the ones that win. So I do think that's a good one to focus on as a trend as well.
I see a question here from Jess, and you can take it, or Sucharita can take it. What are your thoughts on true one-to-one personalization? Is this a trend that retailers are getting into, or is there just a lot to be done to get there yet?
I would argue that there's still a lot that needs to be done. It's been talked about, and it continues to be something that companies are inching their way toward. But I rarely see completely personalized experiences that are based on either explicit or inferred intent. There are some mobile experiences that I wouldn't characterize as necessarily personalization, but they take advantage of data that is in the moment and is here and now. You know, if you look at apps like eBay Now or Uber, you know, I mean, one could argue that they may not be personalized, but they're heavily relevant and based on dynamically pulled data that is incredibly useful to the guest. So I think that we're a ways away for most merchants, but you know, kind of one-to-one is also a moving target.
One final question, and then I think we have to wrap it up. And by the way, you know, please send in your questions regardless, because I will route those to Sucharita and Tom, and they can get back to you personally. I think this is a nice takeaway, that what are some small, quick changes that a company can do on its own website or mobile site right now to improve conversions?
Tom?
That's a difficult one, but I think to improve conversion, well, again, it comes back to this context discussion. What are your customers doing on mobile, right? Are they researching? Are they searching for products? Are they actually purchasing? Typically, we tend to see that customers are searching on a mobile. They're not actually going to transact and say, buy now. So in that regard, I think you really have to think about how do I optimize the search and the navigation experience, because you want to make sure that, you know, if they're on the bus on the way to work, that they can quickly get to that item that they're looking for and get the information that they need quickly. And then later on, perhaps they'll make the purchase, you know, at home on the tablet or whatever. So I think from a mobile standpoint, in terms of merchandising, you know, customers are going to search, and therefore we should optimize for that and think about that, because that's probably going to be your best bet right now in terms of how do you get the customer to purchase.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, great. Thank you so much, Tom and Sujarita. I so appreciate it. On behalf of SDL and Retail Online Integration, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And please, if you also just take a minute to fill out the brief survey that will appear on your screen next, we will be so grateful to hear your comments. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring you in the future. Thanks, and we'll see you at the next ROI webinar.